The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us this morning as certified financial planner Jim Salnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
On today's show, we are live after a couple of months of not being live, if you will. So we are taking your phone calls. We encourage those phone calls. The phone number is 970-353-1310. Or you can always email us live on the show because Jim's got his handy-dandy iPad fired up. And that email address would be jim at jimhelps.com. That's jim at jimhelps.com. In addition to taking your calls, which we hope flood in here momentarily.
Well, they should. We haven't taken a call in 2 months.
Yeah, at 970-353-1310. We also have a few emails that we received this week with some questions. And there's an update on some new rules on the 60-day rollover regulations, I believe, is what you mentioned.
All sorts of things. But we do want to encourage people to call the show. That's why we're live again. This is a test.
Who's the test on?
The listeners.
Who's being tested?
The listeners.
Oh.
Local Colorado listeners. Of course, if you're an iTunian and you're streaming us off the internet or you're listening to us after Saturday by downloading the show off of iTunes, then, of course, you can't call. Or you can call. You can still call. No one's going to answer. But if you want to get the pie, because we are going to give away a pie today. We haven't given away a pie in 2 months. Today we will give away a pie because I don't think we'll be live again in September.
Well, since we haven't been live for so long, we might have some new people who don't know what you're talking about with the pie. So everyone who calls or emails during one of our live shows gets entered into a drawing that we will today conduct at the end of the show in order to win a pie from Fat Albert's, that is a fine restaurant here in Greeley, Colorado. Happens to make some stupendous, amazing, tasty pies.
They do. The pies alone are worth the show today.
Well, that's all the whole reason I'm here.
I'm hoping
we can swing by Fat Albert's on the way home and grab a pie.
No. So anybody who calls today with a legit question, you just can't call and say, hey, what's up? Enter me in the pie drawing. It's not that kind of drawing. You have to actually have a question related to retirement planning, IRA, Social Security, anything of that nature. But if you call, Chris has his little pie hat here. He's going to put your name into the hat. We will pull a number out of the hat, match it up to said name after today's show or during today's show right at the end. And whoever gets chosen will win a Fat Albert's pie. Now, one thing, you cannot go to Fat Albert's today and pick up said pie. You actually have to wait for us to mail you a pie coupon. So it'll come in the mail sometime.
If you can't wait, you could go today, but you'd have to pay yourself.
Yes. Yeah. You can actually absolutely go to Fat Albert's today and buy your own pie. And they would willfully welcome you to come today and buy a pie for Fat Albert's. But if you want it for free, then you have to wait for it to come in the mail. So anybody who has a question, and we just figured today we were driving in saying, we don't even have to talk about what's on today's show. So many people are going to be calling us. We haven't been live in 2 months.
970-353-1310. Let's just sit silently until the phone rings.
We're not going to say another word until
no
that
one ever
red
calls
light.
Right. Nobody ever calls.
Nobody
right
wants
at the top
to be the
hour.
First caller too. So we're going to take caller two.
Well, we already took the first call off air. So anyone who calls now is two or above.
Correct. So you don't have to worry about being the first caller. You are now officially the second caller. Okay, so hopefully people will call and or email. If not, we have other things that we're going to talk about on today's show.
That's good.
That is really good, or it'd be a very long two-hour show. And so we do have other things to talk about for iTunians who are listening later wondering, why isn't anybody calling? We are wondering the same thing, by the way.
Well, it's the crack of dawn here. It's part of it.
It's 8 in the morning.
I know. It's on the weekend, 8 o'clock in the morning. A lot of people are still kind of having their coffee and, I don't know, sleeping.
Okay. Well, if we continue to not get callers, our experiment of having Saturday mornings off
will continue.
Will continue.
Yeah.
Because I kind of liked that experiment to have.
Well, we're getting a lot of questions via email, and if that's how they're going to come in, we don't have to show up live. So that's.
But most of the emails, although I can't say all of them, but most of them are from other states.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's fine.
Which is fine.
We discriminate.
Absolutely not.
We love the USA
do not
and all the states attached.
But this is a prime opportunity for a Northern Coloradoan to give us a call, or even a Central Coloradoan. Or a West Slope, Colorado.
Or a Southern Wyomingite.
True. And we used to get a call on our live shows from a Duluth listener.
Oh, that's true.
We haven't heard from him in a while.
Well, I hope he's listening this morning so he can give us a call, because it's been a long time since we've heard from
Duluth, Minnesota.
Duluth, Minnesota.
Exactly. So, yes, he can absolutely give us a call. Let us know he's still okay. That would be nice. But we used to get him calling. So occasionally we will get foreign calls. Well, not necessarily foreign, but out of state
Minnesota
calls.
Is part of the United States.
Just... I know. That's what I mean. Oh, okay. That's why I'm saying not necessarily foreign. Foreign to us, but still part of the United States.
Well, sure. He does
States.
Have that accent.
Yeah, the Minnesota accent. And didn't he tell us about some sort of meat sandwich they have there?
Yeah, loose meat sandwiches.
Yeah, which I never heard of before.
Mm-hmm. It's,
and then
they're tasty.
Someone else told us about some sort of fly sandwich. A fly pie.
Shoe fly pie?
Shoe fly pie.
Yeah. That's how did you get fly sandwich out of that?
Well, we were talking about sandwiches. I know somebody called and told us about a fly. I thought it was...
No, shoe fly pie.
Yeah, I thought it was...
It's like a custardy pie. It's like a custard pie.
I didn't know what that was. I thought it was someone's
It's so good. It
shooing.
Attracts flies from all over the county
away.
And you got to shoo them away. Yeah.
Right, yeah. I did not realize that. Mm-hmm. Okay, so all the things we learn on today's show. So
excellent.
That is
so what,
good.
I'm curious about this, unless you want to start with something else, the 60-day rule
modification. 60-day rule modification change, yes. We can talk about that. But why don't you give out our phone number again, because I'm sure someone is just dying to give us a call.
970-353-1310. That would be how to contact us right first thing this morning.
And again, anybody who calls will be entered into the pie drawing. So Chris and I are not math magicians, but simple math would dictate pretty much if we get one call today, you're going to win a pie.
Well, unless we get two.
But I'm just saying, if we start off with one, that person is pretty much guaranteed a free Fat Albert's pie.
For a while.
Until we get a second call.
Yeah. Once one comes in, they come flooding in usually.
Oh, really?
Usually.
I have a feeling we'll be giving that pie to Pete today.
Could be. So what's the – first of all, let's explain to everyone what the 60-day rule is.
Okay. Go ahead.
Well, the 60-day rule is involving retirement accounts. And the 60-day rule says that when you have a retirement account and you take money out, you are allowed to put it back in and pretend like you still have it. You haven't taken a distribution from those accounts, but you have a limit of 60 days to get the money back in to a qualified account. Doesn't have to go into the back into the same account. Can go into a different retirement account. But you have that 60-day time frame to get the money back in. And we've talked about this over the past couple of years because there's been some changes to the regulations. There used to be allowed to do this once per account per year. Now it's once per taxpayer per year. So you've only got one shot at doing the 60-day rollover. You can still do what are called direct transfers, where you can move money between accounts. But the 60-day rollover, you actually touch the money. You get the money sent to you, and then you can hold it, technically do with it whatever you want, and then put it back in within the 60 days, and they consider it not having left the confines of a qualified retirement account.
Right. There'll be no taxes and penalties right. on that. But and they did announce a big change to those. Not necessarily a change. They try to simplify it by making it more complicated. So we'll get into that. I know Chris is giving me mm-hmm. the signal. We have two callers, so this is pretty interesting.
They're still talking to Micah, though.
Oh, so. Yeah? Okay. Mm-hmm. So should I keep talking?
Yes.
Wait, all right.
Well, no.
No?
He just put the phone down. So now he's going to type their name. So we'll get back to the 60-day rule. I suspect we'll still have gaps in the show with no callers. And we'll get back to the 60-day rule modifications. So today... Perfect. First phone caller. So first phone caller, we're going to go to David in LaSalle. For those of you not in Colorado, that's just south of Greeley, where we are located right now. Good morning, David. How are you? Hello? Micah is unable to connect me successfully to David. See, this is why we haven't done a live show in a while, or maybe why we should do them more frequently, get some of the technical glitches.
We forgot how to do them. David hung up.
David's gone? Oh, yeah. Okay, well, we'll see who the second person is here in a minute when Micah gets done. So back to your 60-day.
Well, can we ask Dave to call back?
Well, sure, David. You can call back if you'd like. We'll be here for the next
2 hours.
Hour and 45 minutes.
Okay.
It's 8:15 now, local time, in the morning, where okay. I prefer to be sleeping.
Is the next person ready, or should I keep talking?
They'll be ready momentarily. So
the change. So we'll bop back and forth. The mm-hmm. change is.
Thank you.
Oh, hello.
Okay, perfect. So we are going to go to the second caller. I told you they'd start flooding in here, Jim. So we're going to go to Carl. Good morning, Carl. How are you?
Just fine. How are you?
We're doing well, Carl.
Doing well. Thanks for calling in this morning. First thing here. What can we do for you today?
So I've got a question about. I have an IRA account, but I also have some PERA, which is, mm-hmm. A public employees retirement fund.
Right.
And was wondering if I wanted to buy some years of service, would to bolster the PERA account.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be taxable if I transferred or if I used the IRA money to purchase that?
No, it will not be taxable because it'll transfer directly from the IRA over to your PERA. PERA can help you with that. People buy time all the time. They'll buy service years. My sister is a teacher in Massachusetts. She just recently did the same thing with her IRA. So she used some of her IRA, and then there was not enough money in her IRA to buy all the years she wanted. So she used some non-IRA money. That is after-tax money when you're using
right.
the non-IRA money. But her IRA money can be transferred. One unique thing that I just found out on Friday, a colleague had been counseling with me. He was assisting a client doing this. You cannot use a Roth IRA to buy PERA years. I don't quite know why you would want to, because you would be taking a tax-free income stream and turning it into a taxable income stream. But I think in my colleague's situation, his client only had Roth money, and PERA would not accept Roth money.
Okay.
Interesting.
All right.
So it is possible. One thing I'll warn you, though, Carl, before you go, make sure that you are not subject to anything that any part of your retirement income from PERA and or Social Security that would reduce. And the reason I bring that up is we had a client a while back that was in PERA, but she also was eligible for a survivor's benefit from her spouse's Social Security. Now, the problem there, of course, is there's what's called the government pension offset, where her PERA income was actually would significantly reduce her survivor benefit that she would receive from her spouse. And she had purchased credits at PARA. In hindsight, she did that before she spoke to us. Looking at it, it was a terrible decision because what she paid to get extra money out of PARA reduced by two-thirds, you know, on a $2 for every three, her Social Security survivor benefit. So it made the deal, if you will, the cost of those credits exorbitantly high in her case. So just make sure there's no side effects, no kind of coordination of retirement incomes that might be affected. And,
well, I've
and
got well over, I've got well over 40 years of, you know, Social Security.
That doesn't matter for survivor's benefit. That's the
it would
eliminate the WEP, but it was kind of a unique situation. But it was one that clearly would have indicated buying credits was a bad idea. If you're not subject to anything like that, just I was just bringing it up so that you looked around and made sure there weren't any side effects that would make this not quite as attractive for you.
All right, I appreciate it.
And Carl, last question: is it Carl with a K or Carl with a C? Carl with a C. So thanks for calling this morning, Carl. I've got you entered in as our first entrant into the pie drawing that we'll do at the end of the show here. Even if you're not listening, we will contact you if you happen to be the winner of the pie.
Okay, great.
And do you have any other questions, or was that it today?
That was it.
Okay, perfect.
Thanks, Carl. Awesome.
I found that odd because when my colleague got a hold of me, and he asked me, I emailed him back, and I says, you know, I don't see why you can't use a Roth. It makes no sense to me. I said, I don't think the government would have a problem with it because you're taking an asset that would be received tax-free. I mean, if you bought an income annuity inside a Roth IRA, even if it paid you less money than PARA would pay, which it would, it's 100% tax-free. So on a tax-adjusted basis, it may equal out. So I said, I don't see why the government would mind. And then he got back a hold of me about an hour later, said that he called PARA, and they had told him, no, you cannot use Roth assets. Hmm.
The one thing you could do, of course, since on a Roth, at any time for any reason, you can withdraw the money that you've put in. So you could, if you really wanted to do this with Roth money, take out just the money that you've put in and then turn around
and buy the years with that.
So you could kind of indirectly use at least some of the Roth assets. The only thing you might be subject to there is if they were in the Roth because of a conversion or something and there's some restrictions on distributions.
Right. But or if they're, if his client – I didn't ask him his client's age – was over the age of 59 and a half, they could distribute the entire Roth tax-free and use it to buy PARA. But I would still be against that. I would rather have 100% tax-free money.
Yeah. Leave that in there and find other money.
Find
somewhere.
Other ways to buy PARA years.
For sure.
So interesting question that it just came up after counseling with my colleague on that. And it did shock me that you couldn't use a Roth.
I'm surprised they banned that. I guess maybe they should.
My arms around why. Except I think it might be because you cannot move Roth money into a 401k. And PARA isn't a 401k, but it is an ERISA protected retirement account. So I'm just guessing that
part of PARA is that they do have a 401k.
They do have a 401k
in PARA separate.
Right. But this
from
is totally
this.
Yeah. This isn't what I'm talking about. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm just guessing that it's not portable at that level because of that reason. Because I don't feel the government itself would mind.
They don't mind when you pay taxes twice.
Yes, which is essentially what this person would be doing.
Right.
But anyways, you cannot transfer it in. And that's the only reason I told them I can come up with is that because you cannot move a Roth IRA into a 401k, into an ERISA plan, you probably can't move it into PARA because of that. But it's certainly not anything that a politician would be against. Because politicians love to spend money, and in order to spend money, they need taxes. So take something that politicians can't tax and turn it into something they can. I don't think personally they would have a problem with that.
No. They'll probably fix this loophole.
Yeah.
No,
that's a loophole. Let's close that.
Or they'll open that loophole, if you will.
Let's let people do that. Yep. Did we ever get our first caller?
No. Hopefully he's okay.
Guess he didn't want to talk to you.
Well, or there was something happened. I hope nothing happened.
Yeah, I hope so. Okay, well, at least we got one call. We had two for a minute. One left.
That's okay. So we're
see how easy
we're
that
available
was,
to take another call.
We are.
970-353-1310 if you've got a question.
Now, of course, Carl is hoping nobody calls for the rest of the show.
True.
So he can
He's outside right now cutting the phone lines.
So he can ace that free Fat Albert's pie. But did you see how easy that was, folks, for someone to get entered into a drawing to win a Fat Albert's pie?
And get a question answered.
Yeah.
Correct.
So amazing.
And the phone's ringing again.
It could be a first caller.
This is kind of ruining our not come in live on Saturdays thing. That's the only downside. The upside is it's a more interesting show because we have real life people calling
in. Well,
our
emails are real life people.
Well, we don't know that. Those could be computer generated for all we know.
No, they all got back a hold of me. In fact, the two people who we answered their questions, it was either last week's show or the week before, both emailed us back and thanked us for the answers and found them very helpful.
Nice. Do you want to tackle some more of the 60-day rollover, or you want to just wait for this caller to come up?
Well, we got...
it's kind of boring waiting, so people...
Okay. Well, what we're going to eventually get to, maybe, but if we keep getting calls, we won't get to it, is on a 60-day rollover, Chris just kind of hinted what they were. That's when you take money out of an IRA and you have 60 days to put it back into an IRA. As long, and you can have that money for 60 days. You can do whatever you want with it. Now, the government doesn't want you doing anything with it. They simply want you to be acting as a conduit where you take it from one IRA and put it in another. But occasionally, Chris, believe it or not, people screw up and don't get it back within 60 days.
Right. So with that in mind, we're going to go to Dave in Fort Collins. Good morning, Dave. Thanks for calling. What can we do for you today?
Hey, good morning. I got a pretty simple question for you guys.
Yeah.
We built a new house here in Fort Collins here a couple months ago, and so I stopped contributing to a 401 earlier in the year. I've only put about $2,500 in it this year. It is employer matched. So how can I maximize the rest of the year here to get up to the maximum? How do I do that? All right, I know how to do it. Just turn it back on, but how much can I put in for this whole year?
How old are you, Dave?
61.
61. Okay, so you will be able to put in, and I'm trying to do this from memory. Let me open it up. I think it is 22 or 23,000.
Yeah, it's right about 23,000 total. So you have a lot of room to put more in. That won't necessarily mean that your employer will match against that entire amount. That will be dependent upon what the matching agreement is between you and your employer.
It's 24,000 for this year, Dave.
24 now, yeah.
You can put 18,000 in, and because you are over the age of 50, you are allowed to put an additional 6,000 in for a total of 24,000. Now, you've put 2,500 in, so you still have a lot of room left. And what you can do is simply ask your employer to dramatically increase the amount of deferral they're taking from your salary right now to get it up to that. And they can start taking 10, well, you'll need more than 10, but 15, 20, 30% of your salary, because we only have a few months of the year left. And you can get that deferred in. And then just remember in January of next year to reduce that back down. Excuse me. So you can get your you don't want to go over the 24. And the employer won't let you. They usually monitor this. But you will have to reduce that higher amount next January back down to a normal amount.
Okay. Thanks very much. That's exactly what I needed to know. And I'll take it from here and get called up for the rest of the year.
Great.
Okay. Perfect,
thanks,
Dave.
Good luck with that,
and congratulations with the new house.
Thanks a lot.
Bye. Yeah. So now we have two entrants into the pie drawing and another caller, believe it or not.
Wow. We're on fire.
We are on fire. So now we're going to go to Wayne in Loveland. Good morning, Wayne. Thanks for calling this morning. What can we do for you?
Good morning. On a prior call, you referred to a possible a penalty or something on a wife's benefit from a para. Does that apply to survivor benefit from FERS also?
I think he's talking about GPO.
Okay. So on the prior caller, when I mentioned that your benefits from a government pension, FERS or para. The difference with FERS is that, oh, the FERS is pre-Social Security, isn't it? So if you're in FERS, you were not contributing
No, FERS is Social Security. CSRS is pre-Social Security.
Oh, perfect. So FERS, since you're also contributing to Social Security, that will not – you're not going to be subject to the GPO, the government pension offset. The reason why it was an issue with PARA is PARA, like the old CSRS program at the federal government, that was a complete replacement or substitution for Social Security. So if you were in those programs, you were not contributing to Social Security. Under FERS, which is the more modern federal government pension system, it's a hybrid where you still are contributing to Social Security as well as into FERS. So that's a little different scenario, and you don't have to – if that's your only government pension, you don't have to worry about the government pension offset or WEP. If you still have another government pension of any kind that did not participate in Social Security – then you might be subject to these things. But if it's just FERS, you should not have to worry about GPO.
Okay. In my case, it is just FERS.
Yeah, then you should be okay, because FERS, as Chris said, is integrated with Social Security. So you fully contribute to Social Security. Your government colleagues who were in the CSRS system and may still be in it, they get a much larger pension than you, but they never paid into Social Security, so they could fall victim to government pension offset if their spouse were to pass away and they were going to try to collect a spousal benefit under their Social Security, a survivor benefit, rather.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Great. Thanks a lot for calling, Wayne. That was a good question related to the little bit to the question that Carl called in with earlier, with his wanting to use IRA monies to buy additional credits in the Colorado Public Employees Retirement Association.
Yeah, Colorado does not integrate some state pensions. I think Florida is one of them, but I could be wrong on that. Mm-hmm. But some state pensions do integrate with Social Security. Colorado does not. So they will be victims of WEP and GPO. FERS employees with the federal government, they're fully integrated now, so they don't have to worry about it.
Perfect. So this is actually a perfect time to take our bottom of the hour break. So we have a lull in the activity on the phone calls. We've already gotten three in the first segment. Like
That's
you said,
more than
we're
we
on
got.
Fire.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. We're on fire.
So it's good. I guess there's been pent-up demand, either that or people – aren't out
pie.
Doing their summertime activities anymore.
Or they
has
want
cooled
that pie.
Off here. Well, there's a variety of reasons. How about let's go with that?
Or they like us.
Well, could be. So this is the Retirement and IRA Show. When we come back from this short break, we are actually going to hear a top song from 1935, which was the year that Social Security started. And that song that we are going to hear, the hint is it's an example of swing performed by the King of Swing himself. So we'll find out what song that is when we come back from this short break on the Retirement and IRA Show.
Are you interested in your own customized Social Security analysis? If so, visit us at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com and click the Contact Jim and Chris button. Jim and Chris offer a $75 Social Security optimization analysis that includes a one-hour consultation to discuss the specifics of your Social Security situation. This very affordable offer is for both singles and couples and will provide you with the information you need to make an informed decision about claiming your Social Security benefit.
Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. It is one of the top songs from 1935, the year that Social Security was introduced and brought into law. That is Get Rhythm in Your Feet, performed by Benny Goodman and his orchestra. Benny Goodman led one of the most popular musical groups during the 30s and would often appear performing music in the background in many theatrical musicals throughout the 30s and 40s.
Everybody I didn't know he was
Benny
the king
Goodman.
Of swing.
He's the king of swing himself.
Interesting. Yeah. And why do we do this?
Well, we do this because we talk a lot about Social Security on this show. We had a few calls related to Social Security. Two out of the last three had a little taste of a Social Security rule. We were talking about the windfall elimination provision and the government pension offset. Those rules are part of Social Security. And we kind of like to look back to the progression, if you will, of Social Security starting in 1935, which was the year it first started. It was August of 1935 that it was signed into law. And it's still with us today, has been mutated, morphed, and added to and modified since 1935. Rules are somewhat complicated. That's why we talk about it so much on this show. Also on our blog, helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. So we do have our radio show website, theretirementandirashow.com. But that's kind of a broad topics, and we have you can listen to old shows there, that sort of thing. Read a little bit about the topics we cover here on the radio show. But there's so much involved with Social Security; it was really deserving of its own website with our, blog posts, advice, and explanations of the rules. So that is helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. And we've got over 2 years worth of blog posts on there now. So lots of stuff. There's always new stuff coming up. Social Security does change from time to time. Some interesting stories come up, and we have to look into the rules for people. And every once in a while, you learn something fascinating simply because of someone else's experience. So we have a mixture of just topics we cover there, as well as answering blog readers' questions, if you will. Sometimes the questions from the radio show end up on there as well.
Okay, perfect. So that's why we do the songs, and that's why you'll be hearing two more songs before Chris gives us an update on what's new on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. Okay, while we have a lull, hopefully this will be just a lull and not a permanent reduction.
Oh, yes, we are live, remember, everyone. We've had some callers, but we've got open lines right now at 970-353-1310 or 877-353-1310. Maybe that's why we haven't heard from Duluth this morning. You forgot the toll-free number, 877-353-1310. But most local people, most convenient, 970-353-1310.
Okay, give us a call if you have any more questions on any type of retirement-related topic. It can be Social Security, as Chris has already alluded to, or you can ask us questions on your investments, your IRAs, your 401ks, PERA, anything like that. Give us a call. We'll hopefully be able to answer it for you. Until then, let me get into this kind of change to the 60-day rollover rule. This was an interesting change for me, only because I'm a geek on this kind of stuff, and most people could care less about it. Chris didn't even know about it. Not that he could care less about it. He just hadn't heard about it yet. But it was a change that came about on August 24th, and I wanted to talk about it earlier than this, but we never really had an opportunity. So what exactly is the change? What is the government doing on a 60-day rollover? Well, as we talked about in the previous segment before we got callers, a 60-day rollover is essentially where you are going to take cash directly out of an IRA. And you will get possession of that cash for 60 days or less, but you can't be more than 60 days. When you take possession of that cash, you have 60 days to put it in another IRA. If you do it, in other words, you're just acting as a conduit. You're taking cash from one account and moving it to another. If you do that within 60 days, you will owe no taxes and no penalties on that entire transaction. But if you mess up and you miss the 60 days, you will have to pay taxes and a penalty on that money. Well, for years, actually, for a very long time, since 2003, as a matter of fact, the IRS in 2003 issued a revenue procedure ruling. And that's just where a revenue procedure is different than a private letter ruling. But what they try to do in a revenue procedure is explain their interpretation or their there being the IRS. They will explain to you how they interpret a certain law or how they are going to enforce a certain rule. So they're just adding clarity. So revenue procedures are good, Chris, because they add clarity and direction. They give people an understanding of what is going to happen. And they ruled in 2003 that anybody who missed a anybody who missed a 60-day rollover, if you could not get that money back into the IRA within 60 days, and you felt it was for a good reason, and therefore you should not have to pay taxes and penalties and should be granted more time to complete the transaction, you would have to apply for what is known as a private letter ruling in order to get relief from the IRS. They mandated that in 2003. Now, for years, they used to have a tiered pricing structure, Chris, on private letter rulings. It could be as little as $500 to as much as $3,000 to ask for relief on private letter ruling 60-day rollover problems. But 3 years ago, they abolished that and started charging everyone $10,000. So they went from $500, $1,500, or $3,000 to $10,000 per private letter ruling. So if you were rolling over $50,000 and you missed the 60-day time limit, you would have to pay $10,000 just to ask for forgiveness and explain your side of the story. And that doesn't even count the professionals you would have to hire to navigate the paperwork of completing a PLR. Well, they've changed it. I know we have a caller, so we're going to get to that caller. They've simplified this, and after we help this caller, I'll get back into explaining what they did August 24th of this past year.
Excellent. So we're going to go to David in LaSalle, who did get back a hold of us. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
What can we do for you?
My question is, I know that here in Weld County, there is some kind of a program that financial aid or a person can receive payments. I didn't pursue it because I understand you have to be 60 years old, and I'm not yet. But my question is it a part of Social Security? And if it's not, where do the payments come from? I understand they're based on how much you've earned, you know, over the years. So to me, it sounds like Social Security, but I didn't think it would start.
I don't believe Weld County itself has anything for community members where they're just going to start paying you money merely because you've retired. They may have, and I don't know offhand if there's a listener who can share this, they may have their own pension system for Weld County employees. In fact, I think they do. We have a few Weld County employees, mm-hmm. and I believe they have their own pension. So Weld County employees may be eligible for a Weld County-sponsored pension plan, but it is certainly not something that Weld County residents are eligible to receive. You have to be an employee to get it.
Okay.
I'm suspecting that's what you heard about. And those generally can start as early as age 60.
Depends on what Weld County
itself.
has set their average mm-hmm. retirement age is. So it could be as early as 60. But yeah, what you're talking about is a government pension. I used to be a police officer on the East Coast. If you're a longtime listener, most people know that. And the city I worked for sponsored a pension plan for their employees. So local cities, county governments, some of them will sponsor a pension plan for their employees, but it's just not available to anyone who lives there. Goodness, Weld County would be bursting at the seams if Weld County was going to pay people just for living here. Hell, I'd move to Weld County if someone was going to pay me.
That was my question, I guess, exactly. Yeah,
if you end up hearing something different than that and it turns out to be some type of social assistance for certain people, we'd love to hear about it if you want to call back sometime.
Yeah, but I suspect you're hearing about the pension that's available to Weld County employees.
Great. Well, thanks for the call, David. Did you have any other questions?
No, that was pretty much it.
Okay, well, thanks for calling this morning. I've got you entered into the pie drawing. You're now one of four people, so if you listen to the end of the show, we'll find out who the winner of the pie is this
month. We have a Dave and a David.
True. So you are, if you hear Dave, I'm sorry, that's not you. You are David today, and the other one's Dave.
So. We have a Dave from Fort Collins and a David from LaSalle.
Right on.
Perfect.
You'll be David from LaSalle, David.
Yeah, perfect.
Okay.
Cool. I'll be listening.
Okay, thanks, David. So just like David called in and the three others, so we're up to four now. Please call in if you have a question, 970-353-1310. Or toll-free, 877-353-1310. Back to the new provisions, the new 11 reasons where you can ask for forgiveness for violating a 60-day rollover rule without having to pay the $10,000 private letter ruling.
Exactly. And people might be thinking right now, why would anyone ever want to do this? Why would anyone ever want to take money from an IRA rather than just doing a transfer anyways? Because you said in your description in the previous segment, Chris, you can still do what they call a direct trustee-to-trustee transfer, which is how most people move an IRA. Most people will send paperwork to their current IRA custodian authorizing them to transfer the money electronically to their new IRA. And they never touch the money and there's never a problem. But why would people want to take cash out? Well, we do have cases where people are doing it as a short-term loan, which was not the reason why they created this rule, but people were taking cash out of their IRAs, trying to spend it or use it for something for 60 days under the assumption they would receive enough money within that 60-day period to put it back in. And that was what some people do, but there are legitimate reasons for doing it. And we have a case right now where a person who's working with us is going to have to do one. This person opened, Chris, a MIGA. And we haven't talked about MIGAs, multi-year guaranteed annuity. We're going to talk about them on another show. But this annuity promised to pay them for 5 years. They had promised to pay them 2.45% a year for 5 years. Not a lot of money, but in today's low interest rate environments on this particular fixed annuity, it was a reasonable amount of interest. Well, what had happened is as this person opened the IRA, Chris, it was an annuity inside an IRA. As they opened the IRA, the annuity company themselves, Chris, made a mistake with the paperwork. And the money did not transfer into the annuity in time. He had to get the money in within 30 days, and it would have been perfect. This was the rule of the insurance company. This is an IRS rule. And the insurance company was telling this gentleman that if you can get the money into this annuity within 30 days, we will guarantee you 2.45% interest a year for 5 years. And then at the end of 5 years, you get your money and you can go do what you want. Well, because the insurance company muffed up, the money did not get in within that 30-day period, and the gentleman noticed when he was reviewing his paperwork several weeks after opening it, Chris, that he was only getting 2% interest, not 2.45.
Mm-hmm.
So he came into our office and was curious on what the problem was. And we contacted the insurance company. And it turns out they said, yes, we didn't get the money into the IRA annuity within 30 days. That was our rule to pay the 2.45. The money didn't get in for 2 weeks later. And we asked, well, why did it take so long? And they said, we sent the wrong paperwork. So they admitted it was their mistake.
Yeah.
And the gentleman said, well, we want you to honor it. We didn't mess up. You did. And the insurance company said no.
Oh, wow.
So
high quality insurance company there.
I asked the gentleman when I was on the phone, are we within the 30-day free look provision? And he said, yes, you are. You have 2 more weeks. For those who don't know what I'm talking about, most annuities, when you open them, will give you 30 days to change your mind. And you can close the annuity without any penalty. If he does not get his money out of that IRA annuity in 2 more weeks, there will be a penalty for him to access his money. Mm-hmm. Now, that's how annuities work. The insurance company there isn't doing anything nefarious. They need to invest that money for 5 years. And in an effort to keep people from closing annuities and treating them like bank accounts, because they pay substantially more in interest, they impose these penalties to keep you from wanting to take mm-hmm. your money. That way they can invest it for 5 years and can afford to pay 2.45% interest, or in this case now only 2%. So because he was within the two-week period, he can he's within the 30-day period. He's got 2 weeks left of his 30 days. But my concern, I told him, was I don't think you're going to have time to file transfer paperwork. Mm-hmm. If this insurance company already muffed up once, mm-hmm. you have to get a hold of your IRA and get that IRA to send transfer paperwork to this annuity company and ask them to transfer. You're going to get all this done in 2 weeks. I don't think you're going to have enough time.
Right.
So my suggestion to him was, you may want to do the 60-day rollover and just ask for a complete distribution of that IRA, and they will send you a check immediately. By law, they have to do that. As soon as you tell them you want to close the account, that has to be done. Mm-hmm. So I believe that's how he's going to do it. But it was an interesting case that just happened this week in our office on why someone would want to do a 60-day rollover.
Yeah, and that I would say that most of the cases where there's clear justification for doing a 60-day rollover for a reason other than trying to do a personal loan for 60 days, which is not what that's meant to do, but what some people use it for. But the other reasons are mostly timing issues, because we run into issues where people are trying to make some adjustments or changes between accounts right at the end of the year, and there's a deadline of December 31st coming up, and there's no way, again, the paperwork for a transfer will be processed in time, but you can get a distribution, which you can then treat as a 60-day rollover, accomplished in time.
Right. So the insurance company, again, would have to honor his his distribution request immediately, whereas if he was going to try transferring it back to the IRA, yeah. He wouldn't be able to do it. And if people are wondering, why is he transferring it, because 2% is still more than what he can find in a bank, I agree, but it was the principal, he said. Mm-hmm. He didn't like the fact that he did nothing wrong. The insurance company admitted they made the mistake, but they're not going to honor it and give him the 2.45. They're only giving him 2.
I don't blame him.
So he is moving it back, and it did kind of turn out okay. I did find another equally highly rated insurance company. This was an A-rated insurance company that was doing this. I don't want to say who it is, but it shocked me. I found another it was an A-plus rated company as well, paying on 5 years, 2.25 for 5 years. So he's getting a little bit more than what he's getting now at 2, but not the 2.45 mm-hmm. that this insurance company had promised him when he tried doing this. So anyways, that was just an interesting case recently of why you would want to do a 60-day rollover. Now, what happens? Let's go back to the scenarios here. What happens if you don't get the money back in within 60 days? Again, under the old revenue procedure from 2003, if you felt the reason why you didn't get the money in within 60 days was not your fault – remember, everything is someone else's fault nowadays. So if it's someone else's fault, you still had to pay $10,000 for a private letter ruling. That's just a chance, an opportunity to lay your case out to the IRS on why you should not be taxed and penalized on this distribution and why you should have more time to get it in. Well, when they raised the price to $10,000, remember at first it was a sliding scale of $500, $1,500, or $3,000, depending on how much money you were trying to roll over. When they got rid of the sliding scale pricing on private letter rulings and the IRS raised it to $10,000, it did cause a bit of a hussy fit, and I don't blame them. If you mm-hmm. remember when this first happened, Amy was our host, mm-hmm. and remember she bought on he was congressman, now he's Senator Gardner, because she wanted to complain at the cost of a $10,000 private letter ruling on an IRA. Do you remember that mm-hmm. show?
I totally do.
Yeah. So I think the IRS heard people loud and clear that 10 grand is a little excessive. So what they did is they came up with a new solution. The new revenue procedure dated August 24th, 2016 said you don't have to apply for a private letter ruling if you did not get the money into the IRA for one of 11 reasons. And I'm going to list in the next segment what those 11 reasons are. And what happens is this. If you qualify for one of these 11 reasons, you will contact the IRA custodian. And they are going to give you a, I guess you could say a certification letter. It's a pre-written letter where you are going to check off which of the 11 reasons you are claiming. You are going to certify that you're not lying. You're going to sign it and return it to the custodian. And now the custodian will be allowed to accept that money into an IRA. But what the custodian will do is report to the IRS everyone who files that letter. So they're going to know you're claiming one of these 11 reasons. And they can audit you later for proof on those 11 reasons. But you won't have to pay, Chris, one red cent to do this.
Perfect. So we'll hear what those 11 reasons are when we come back from this short break. We'll also lead in from this break with the number one song from this week in 1976 as we look back 40 years. This week's song was designed to get the crowd up and jumping, having a good time, or as the band says, quote, get off their cans and get out there and do it. This song also holds the record for being the only song title with a word repeated more than three times. So we'll hear what that is when we return from this short break here on the Retirement and IRA Show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show here. That is the number one song this week in 1976 as we look back 40 years on our journey to the update on what's new with helpwithmysocialsecurity.com, our blog post on our blog site, if you will, on Social Security topics. Jim, do you recognize that song? Probably did a lot of dancing to that song back in your day.
In my youth.
In your youth.
Yes, I remember that song.
So that is Shake, 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 Shake Your Booty by KC and the Sunshine Band. Became their third number one hit on the Billboard Hot 100. While there was some controversy at the time of the song's release due to the suggestive nature of the title, we can now play it on AM radio and it's fine, apparently, in 2016. KC wanted a catchphrase to build a song around that could be used to get people up and dancing. The word shake is used 8 times in the chorus. That's a lot of shaking.
That's a lot of shaking.
A lot of booty, too.
Okay. I know their other – I didn't know they had 3 number one hits. I know Saturday Night was one. Shake Your – what was the third one?
I think we've already – we must have already played it. I don't know. Micah can look it up and tell us.
I know Saturday Night was their biggest hit, but I can't for the life of me think of what their third number one hit was.
I don't know. Mike, I'll look it up maybe when you're talking
the
about
power of Google.
The 11 reasons that you can avoid the penalties involved in missing a 60-day rollover.
So what we have is a revenue procedure that...
Oh, wait. We're live.
For
people
that's
just joining
that's right.
us, this is a live show. You can interrupt us at any moment.
And we
with
want
a phone
you to.
Call. We do at 970-353-1310. We've already had four callers this show. You can be the fifth, and the fifth is the luckiest one. So the next caller, wow, you've got the whole world in front of you. 970-353-1310 or 877-353-1310. We are going to do a pie drawing at the end of the show for all live callers, all dead callers too. I mean, callers to our live show. We are going to draw for the pie at the end of the show. So proceed with your 11 reasons you can avoid the PLR $10,000 fee for missing a 60-day rollover and asking for forgiveness.
Perfect. So again, they being the IRS, released revenue procedure on August 24th of this year, changing the rules on how much you have to pay to ask for forgiveness. Excuse me. The rule was changed several years ago, forcing people to pay $10,000 to ask for forgiveness if they took more than 60 days to get money into an IRA when they were trying to do a rollover. And I guess after a lot of negative feedback, the IRS came out and said, okay, we're not going to lower the $10,000, but if you qualify because you did not get the money into an IRA because of one of 11, I guess you could call them, Chris, pre-approved excuses. One of 11 pre-approved excuses, and that's my terminology, not the IRS's. You do not have to file a PLR, private letter ruling, and you don't have to pay $10,000. You do have to follow a few rules, though. First, you will be given a declaration that you have to sign. The revenue procedure doesn't say where this declaration is going to come from. I suspect you are either going to download it as a form from the IRS's website, or you will receive it directly from the custodian. That's the company that's going to hold your IRA. So the declaration will state all 11 reasons, and you have to check the one that applies to you. You have to sign it and acknowledge that you still face income and excise taxes, as well as interest and penalties if you are audited and found to not be in compliance with one of the 11 pre-approved excuses. You also acknowledge that the custodian receiving this rollover money will report to the IRS that you have claimed one of the 11 reasons applies to you. I suspect the reason why the IRS wants to know who is making this claim, I think they want, Chris, to highlight them for possible audit, most likely a letter audit. In other words, they'll probably send a letter to these people saying, you indicated you qualify for one of our pre-approved excuses. Can you please send us the proof now that one of these 11 apply to you? I would believe that's why they're requiring this signed declaration and your acknowledgement that you will have to prove this and you could still be held. Just because you're filing that, they're saying, does not prevent you from being audited and prevent us from still holding you responsible.
But a letter audit is not as scary as a full-blown live audit where they're going to send you a letter asking for something specific.
Correct.
As long as you supply
send it to them. Right.
All good. Yep. That's all that matters. That's why you need to keep records on these things.
Okay, so what are these 11 pre-approved excuses? So beginning August 24th, if you miss money going into an IRA on a 60-day rollover for one of these 11 reasons, you can put it back in. And now the money, by the way, I didn't mention this, the money has to be contributed within a quote-unquote reasonable period of time. And as is always, the IRS sometimes never defines what some of these terms mean. But inside this revenue procedure, they did define what reasonable period of time is, and that's 30 days. So you have 30 days from the period of time where the pre-approved excuse that kept you from getting the money into the IRA is no longer keeping you from getting the money into the IRA. You have 30 days from that period, Chris, to get the money into the IRA. Okay. So the first reason, the first pre-approved excuse that the IRS will accept is if an error was made by the receiving custodian. So that's fairly straightforward. An error was committed by the financial institution receiving your contribution, or an error was made by the custodian that was releasing the money. So in other words, you didn't make a problem, Chris, or you didn't cause the issue. The IRA did. The custodian of the IRA, either the IRA that you were transferring from or the IRA you were transferring the money to, made the mistake. So that's the first one. And that always was, Chris, a excuse that they would accept. Mm-hmm. The problem is you had to pay $10,000 just to get it done. And then you had to hold the financial institution liable to pay you that money. And it was just a real pain in the hiney. So they just kind of simplified it here. Okay, here is one that you and I have always talked about, Chris. The distribution was sent to you as a check, and you misplaced and never cashed the check.
Mm. So there's one that's your fault, effectively, but they're going to let you off the hook for that. But I guess since you never cashed the check, the thought is you never technically received the money because you didn't cash the check.
Or they're just being nice and saying, because you never cashed it. Right. Remember, one thing I can tell you people is the IRS will never give forgiveness for people who are trying to do this as a short-term loan to themselves.
Yep.
And that's why it specifically says the money was sent to you as a check. In other words, it wasn't direct deposited into your bank account. It was sent to you as a check. That check was never cashed. I don't even think it – I mean, the check was misplaced. Why they put that in there? How are they going to prove you misplaced it? I don't care. A check could have been sitting on your bureau in your bedroom. As far as I'm concerned, you didn't misplace it. You just never cashed it. And now it's more than 60 days and you never cashed the check. They're going to give you forgiveness. So it's an interesting concept, and I think they took that approach because they're saying you never cashed it, so you never had access to the money. So they're going to give you more time to deposit that check. Okay. This one is, again, a muff-up by the person, not the custodian. The distribution check was deposited, but is deposited into an account the taxpayer thought was an IRA but wasn't. That has happened many times. Mm-hmm. We talked about people doing that. This is one of the problems with the 60-day rollover. So somebody gets this money, and then they go to put it in their IRA, and they put the wrong account number down, or they thought they had an IRA and it wasn't. Mm-hmm. They're going to now give that as an excuse for
You can't leave it in there. You still have to fix it, but that would get you off the hook. As long as you get this fixed within that 30 days past the 60 days, so you kind of effectively have, I guess they give you a grace period there to get it fixed.
You will have to have had the money put into the wrong account within 60 days. Mm-hmm. You can't put it in 70 days and then say, oh, I put it into the wrong account. Give me forgiveness. No.
Right.
But if you put the money in within 60 days but put it into a non-IRA, they will now give you forgiveness. So that's an interesting one again. A member of the taxpayer's family died. They did not define. They just said a member. What if it is your third cousin twice removed living four states away?
Hmm. That one's pretty wide open.
Yeah.
You miss it, start looking for...
long lost family.
Looking for family that's passed.
And kill them.
That's going a little far, Jim, but...
Well, they got to be dead. Hey, can you do me a favor?
Yeah.
But they just said a member of the taxpayer's family. I just think they need to define that a little bit more before a lot of third cousins twice removed are being cited as the reason why you didn't get the money in. And do you have to, like, go to their funeral and stuff? Or can you
you're just emotionally distraught and you forgot to do it.
Because your third cousin twice removed passed away?
Yeah.
Okay.
Some people are very close with their family.
Okay. The taxpayer's principal residence is severely damaged.
So like hurricane, fire, something.
Well, the problem is that requires a lot of subjective judgment, in my opinion, because the IRS does not define what severe damage is. Gee, a branch fell on my roof, knocked off a couple shingles. I get it fixed. I totally forgot about it.
Yeah.
I'm just saying some of their reasoning, and this is one of the things that Ed Slot Group pointed out to us. They didn't define severely damaged. Is that a kid threw a baseball through my window? I had to get it fixed. I totally forgot because I was so irate at my snot-nosed neighbor kid.
Well, it could be the baseball went through the window, knocked the check off of the bureau.
And you can't find it.
And you can't find it now. It slipped your mind because of the damage.
I just think they're setting themselves up for a lot of...
Well, I think they're saying if you can come up with any sort of halfway reasonable justification for missing this, we'll give you that extra 30-day grace period. I think that's what they're kind of saying here.
But remember, it's 30 days from the point in time where one of these 11 pre-approved excuses is no longer hindering you from getting the money in.
Oh, so it could be more than 30 days from the...
It's from when you are no longer... It's not just they're giving you 30 extra days. They're giving you 30 extra days from the period of time where you are no longer being hindered. Because, for instance, another reason is the taxpayer is in jail.
So if the hindrance has to come up before the 60 days. Though.
Correct.
Because if it's 70 days, so you've missed it for no reason, no justifiable reason, and then...
The hindrance has to come in within these 60 days.
So you're getting a maximum of 30-day grace period, but possibly much less.
Well, let's look at the jail one.
Yeah.
Pre-approved excuse number 7, the taxpayer was incarcerated. This was an actual PLR we talked about a few years ago.
Yep.
And the guy won.
Yes.
He got arrested for drunk driving. He had the check. He didn't get it in time because he was in jail and they gave him forgiveness. So what if you get sent away to jail for 20 years during that 60-day period?
So that's
you got 20 years and 30 days from the day you're released from jail. Of course, if it was sent to you as a check, no bank's going to cash that check after 20 years. So you've deposited the check.
It's not that they could be sitting in your account, your bank account, and then you get incarcerated.
Or the check could be on your bureau.
Or the check on the bureau. That's a whole other thing. But yeah.
So
could be much longer than the 30 days from the end of the 60.
But when you start saying it's 30 days from the period of time where the pre-approved excuse is no longer a hindrance, again, my home was severely damaged. My house was severely damaged a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. Someone who shall remain nameless forgot to shut his swamp cooler off before it froze. And
it took you over a year.
It took me a while to get that room cleaned up.
To get everything all fixed up in that house.
Yeah.
So
I mean, at what point in time?
Yeah. You were so busy every day doing that for a year and a half.
Okay. So, again, I'm just listing the reasons. And, again, a member of your family died. We talked about that one, but it doesn't define how close does that member have to be. Okay. The taxpayer or a member of the taxpayer's family, we're going back to that third cousin twice removed, become seriously ill. And once again, subjective here, they do not define what serious ill is. Gee, I had a cold. I really wanted to get that money in, but I didn't feel good for a good 2 weeks. See where I'm going with this?
They're really opening the door here.
Yeah. So the taxpayer or a member of the taxpayer's family was seriously ill. Again, you can drive a Mack truck through some of these pre-approved excuses. Okay, this one I don't think is going to be used too often. You were restricted by a foreign country.
Oh, so you're detained. You're trapped. That spring break in North Korea just got extended.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I couldn't get out of – I couldn't leave France.
Yeah.
I was on the Riviera and I couldn't get out. But okay. Oh, this one, Chris, we have talked about this one. A postal error has occurred. In other words, they're mailing you the check. A postal error occurred. Mm-hmm. And we specifically talked about this because actually these and this one really technically shouldn't even be a pre-approved excuse. The rule is quite explicit. The 60 days begins from the period of time you physically receive the check. Not when it was asked for, not when the custodian mailed it, but when you received it. You have to receive it. And we talk about, remember we said you could literally leave that check in your mailbox on the street and never take it. And the 60 days doesn't begin until the date you receive it. Not only that, there's absolutely no way the IRS can prove the date you physically received the check. Mm-hmm. Because these checks are not sent to you with a return receipt request.
Not unless they – I think if this starts being abused, they'll probably require that or something.
You think people would abuse these things?
No, wow.
Come on.
Maybe a couple people.
Chris, no, people aren't going to do that. But we talked about that on our show before because that confused a lot of people. A lot of people thought the day I called up the IRA and asked for a distribution, that was the day the 60 days began. No, it is not. People thought, is it the day that the check was cut by my IRA custodian and mailed to me? So in other words, the date on the check? No, it is not. And is it the date that the post office actually put it in my mailbox? No, it is not. It's actually when you pick up the check. That's when you're supposed to start counting 60 days. But in this particular case, they're saying a postal error has occurred. So once again, now you can't cash the check and claim you never got it. But again, you could always say, hey, I didn't get this check. And we talk about when I first moved to Berthoud, Colorado, for those iTunians who don't know what we're talking about, I mailed my father a Christmas gift shortly at the beginning of November. It was, I think, the first or second week in November. Mailed him a Christmas gift, which he promptly received the following April. And
it was a super special tax day surprise.
Shortly, it was in April, but and I granted I did mail it to Massachusetts, 2,000 miles away, so it took them a while to get it there. But we openly joked that it is quite possible for that to happen, and the 60 days doesn't begin. But now
even Pony Express would have gotten it there before that time period. Yes.
Okay. Pre-approved excuse number 10. The distribution was made on account of a levy under the IRS code section 6331, and the proceeds of the levy have been returned to the taxpayer. That's a fancy way of saying the IRS claimed you owed them money, but later realized you didn't owe them money, so they sent you the money back. So if you're taking money out of your account because of a levy, and then later they return that levy to you, they will give you an extra 30 days to get that money into your IRA.
Once they give it back to you.
Once they give it back to you.
Because that's the end of the hindrance of you putting it back in. That's a good one. I could see somebody, not many people, but I could see that happening to people because the IRS occasionally makes a mistake. They convince you you owe them money. They levy your IRA, which they have the right to do, and then turns out maybe a year later, it could be any time later, they figure out, oh, that was wrong, here's the money back. You then have 30 days to put it back in, and it qualifies under the 60-day rule effectively.
Mm-hmm.
Good. That's a good one. I like that one.
And this last one is kind of like another slice of bread on a sandwich because it is totally
– So it's like a club sandwich?
It's totally related – to the first slice of bread. The first slice of bread on the top of this pre-approved sandwich, the IRS said, look, if the receiving custodian or the releasing custodian makes the error, we're not going to hold you responsible. And the very last reason, and I'll read the entire verbiage of this last reason. It's really confusing. I think they're just repeating themselves, but taking a long time to do it. Okay. The party making the distribution to which the rollover relates, delayed providing information that the receiving plan or party or IRA required to complete the rollover despite the taxpayer's reasonable efforts to obtain said information.
I don't think that would be it's not a mistake. It's just them delaying and dragging their feet on supplying information so that the rollover can be completed.
But that's still a mistake.
I don't know that that's – see, that's – I think that's where they're clarifying. You could argue that's not really a mistake. Their processes are just slow.
Okay.
And that's an excuse. That's not your fault, taxpayer. So we'll give you forgiveness automatically if that were to occur. I think that's why it's a little different than the first piece of bread at the top, number one.
Okay. I think the big thing I wanted listeners to get out of this, a lot of these pre-approved excuses now will end up being defined, because I do think people are going to abuse them, especially the your house suffered severe damage. Well, they didn't define what severe damage means. Is severe damage a rock being thrown through the window? How many people are going to go out at night and start chucking rocks through their windows? I mean, what is severe damage? The taxpayer was ill. I mean, come on, do you have to be in the hospital? Is it just I didn't feel good, I had the flu? Mm-hmm. How are you going to prove that? You're going to save receipts from the tissue box you bought? And then, of course, there was a death or serious illness in the family. But they don't define how far back that lineage has to go. So anyways, I think it's nice what they're trying to do. I just think some people may, believe it or not, try to abuse this to their advantage, and I think the IRS is going to add clarification in the future of what some of these more open-ended judgment calls are.
Excellent. Well, we do have clarification on one burning question from the show. What were the number one hits from KC and the Sunshine Band? So on my notes, Tina indicated that Shake, 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 Shake Your Booty was the third. Isn't that what it said?
Yeah, that's what you said.
I'm going to have to disagree. It's the fourth.
It's the fourth
of five.
They had five number one hits?
They had five number one hits. Those hits being Get Down Tonight, That's the Way I Like It, I'm Your Boogeyman, then Shake, 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 and then Please Don't Go. It's the fifth.
Saturday Night never made it to number one?
It did not.
No.
I looked it up.
Where did Saturday Night make it to?
I didn't look that up, but I looked up the number ones, and there's five.
I'll be
that's
dubbed.
The order. I'm not sure who the – well, probably Kim Carnes or somebody was walking it.
Back to your poor old Kim Carnes.
Kim Carnes or Lionel Richie. One of those was blocking it.
All right.
Unfairly. Anyway. Oh, you know what? Look at that. We're close to the bottom of the hour. So let me remind people first that we are live, even though we just ranted on 11 reasons you can avoid paying $10,000 to ask forgiveness from the IRS for making a mistake on your 60-day rollover situation. Or not necessarily a mistake, but not completing your 60-day rollover within the time limit. The phone call to get a hold of us if you have a question, 970-353-1310 or 877-353-1310. We've got one segment left, so we have four callers right now. Each have a 25% chance of winning the pie. If you want to throw your hat in the ring or your name in the hat, if you will, call 970-353-1310, ask us a question related to retirement in some way, and we'll add you to that list. When we come back from this short break, we are going to hear the number one song from 35 years ago this week. And technically, I think we're not. So again, this week, the number one hit is that obnoxious Lionel Richie, Diana Ross duet, Endless Love. But instead of playing that over and over and over and over again, we're instead going to play a song that was a movie theme that featured a newcomer who had already had a number one hit. Both the movie and the song became huge hits worldwide. I would have known this who this was without even seeing. I can see who it is on my notes.
Well, I can't see.
You'll recognize it.
I'll recognize it.
So this is the Retirement and IRA Show. We will be back with you after this short break.
Are you interested in your own customized Social Security analysis?
If so, visit us at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com and click the Contact Jim and Chris button. Jim and Chris offer a $75 Social Security optimization analysis that includes a one-hour consultation to discuss the specifics of your Social Security situation. This very affordable offer is for both singles and couples and will provide you with the information you need to make an informed decision about claiming your Social Security benefit.
Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. That was the number four song 35 years ago this week in 1981. Of course, that's For Your Eyes Only by Sheena Easton. It's her second number one hit, so she was fairly young at the time. This was for the 12th James Bond movie. The song was written by Bill Conti and Mike Leeson, who had originally written the song for Donna Summer or Dusty Springfield. But the film studio suggested Sheena Easton, based on her previous number one hit, Morning Train. Remember that one, mm-hmm. Jim? While Conti at first balked at the choice, Sheena Easton eventually won out. The group Blondie also recorded a version of this song for the film, but it was rejected. I gotta hear that. I'm gonna have to dig that one up somehow. Sheena became the only performer of James Bond theme music to actually appear in the opening titles of the movie singing the song. That's a fun fact right there.
And we also solved the problem on why KC and the Sunshine Band's Saturday Night never made it to number one. It's because they never sang it.
Correct.
So we'll own up to a mistake. When Chris makes one, he'll be the first to admit it.
Yeah, my mistake was not pointing out that Jim was referring to the wrong group.
Yes. Bay City Rollers sang Saturday Night, and it did hit number one, which is what we figured it did. But it was the Bay City Rollers, not KC and the Sunshine Band.
So I don't know if we warned Micah about the Tom Jones. No,
Mike.
Well,
is looking
we're
going
to do the. So, why do we do this? This musical tribute, if you will. We're looking back at key numbers or dates in Social Security's history. 1935, when Social Security started, 40 years ago, referencing the 40 elapsed years reference in the Social Security calculation, 35 years ago, having to do with 35 computational years in your Social Security retirement benefit calculation. All to lead up with what's new on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com, which we're going to do right now.
Do
and then normally, yeah. What's new, pussycat? Right?
Normally, Tom Jones. There we go.
There we go.
So you can see Micah Perfect. Is a professional engineer because he found that song all by himself and played it.
Well, it was in our library, probably. But anyway, this week on What's New with HelpWithMySocialSecurity.com. Long website name, HelpWithMySocialSecurity.com. Hopefully easy to remember. Easy to make a typo, though, because that's a lot of letters.
It's a lot of letters you got to put in there.
Anyway, what I cover this week is the what's called the first year rule with Social Security. This one is a little complicated. I'll try to summarize here. We all should know, if you've listened to the show much at all, that for Social Security, if you claim your Social Security prior to your full retirement age, which for most people these days is 66, you are subject to what's called the earnings test. If you claim Social Security while earning money from work, you can only earn in 2016 $15,720. Dollars before you're subject to this test, and that would offset your Social Security $1 for every $2 you earn over that. We also all should know that once you reach your full retirement age, the earnings test goes away completely. So the month that you reach your full retirement age, you can earn as much as you want, and it has no effect on your Social Security, no reduction at all. There's also a rule in the year you turn your full retirement age, the earnings test is much higher, $41,880 instead of that $15,000 figure. So there is still the earnings test in the months prior to your turning full retirement age, but the limit is much, much greater. So there's they essentially reduce the penalty, if you will, for working in that very last year before you turn your full retirement age. But there's a third situation, and that is retiring and claiming your Social Security benefit prior to the year you turn your full retirement age. And the scenario essentially is, let's say you worked for 6 months. You work for 6 months and your job pays you $60,000 so a year, so you earned $30,000 in the first 6 months. But then you retired, you quit work, and you claim your Social Security benefit. Well, $30,000 that you earned is well above the $15,720 limit that I mentioned. But they have a special rule for that year. The first year that you claim, they'll actually prorate the limit on a monthly basis. And as long as you don't earn more than that monthly limit, so they'll divide the $15,720 by 12, and for those remaining 6 months of the year on a monthly basis, if you don't earn over that limit, which is $1,200 or something like that roughly, you will not be subject to the earnings test, despite the fact that in that year before you retired, you earned way over the limit, $30,000. So this is a very unique, special rule that applies just to the first year. After that, if you start earning money again, next year, the year after that, they don't prorate it like that. It's on an annual basis again. So this is just a special rule to help minimize the pain, if you will, for people who work for a while.
Well, they do
the year
that,
and
to
then
be
retire.
Fair, because mm-hmm. if you're going to continue working and retire, I mean, I was born in July, and if I wanted to wait until my birthday, say, I get 7 months that I've already worked, mm-hmm. and it wouldn't be fair for people born later in the year or for people who don't want to retire right in January.
Correct.
So that's why they did this.
Yep. But it's a, like I said, a one-time thing. They call it a once-in-a-lifetime benefit, the first-year rule.
And you can continue working. Let's again say it's about a $1,200 a month limit they put on. You could, quote-unquote, retire after earning $100,000. You earned $100,000 from January through July. And that is enough to more than wipe out, under the earnings test, your Social Security. That doesn't matter. And what they're then going to say is, from the minute you retire onwards, as long as you don't earn more than $1,200 in any given month, we will give you that benefit. So you could continue earning $1,000 that month mm-hmm. and still not lose Social Security. So they're just trying to be fair for people who are going to try to work and not retire every January, and just to be fair. So I kind of like that rule.
Good. Good. So that's what's new this week on HelpWithMySocialSecurity.com. What's new, pussycat? Whoa, 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 whoa. Excellent.
Excellent.
So we are live. I should have mentioned that before. We're actually getting kind of short here. We have exactly 15 minutes left for somebody to call in, ask their question on retirement, and get entered into the pie drawing for a Fat Albert's pie.
How many pie people we got so far?
We've got four pie people.
Four.
We have room for more pie people. We could get at least one, if not two, calls in between now and the end of the show at 970-353-1310 or 877-353-1310. We haven't touched any of the emails that we've gotten, so if we don't get a caller here momentarily, we'll dive into one of those emails.
I can't answer these questions in 15 minutes.
Well, I'll help you with that. I'll give you the finger across the neck. No?
That ain't going to help.
No? You can't find a simple one?
Well, the ones I was going to – no, you know me.
So what are you going to – we're just going to sit here the last 15 minutes? Waiting for someone to call 970-353-1310.
I can find ample things to talk about.
Okay.
I just don't. I can't do justice for these email questions.
Well, how about the Patriots?
We can talk about the New England Patriots.
Football started back up this week. This is the beginning of
their first upcoming
football.
Loss.
Mm-hmm. Well, you
since
never know.
Tom Brady was unceremoniously barred.
They might half the team in Arizona might come down with the flu.
That would be good. Maybe they're trying to do
equalizer.
Right. But,
Arizona's looking strong this year.
Yeah,
although
yeah,
it's
yeah,
just preseason, but they're looking pretty good.
Well, we don't have Gronkowski. We don't have Brady.
Ninkovich. You let Hot Roast go. What's up with that? I was hoping Broncos would pick up Hot Roast again.
Well, apparently he doesn't have what Bill Belichick wanted.
And Vince Wilfork is gone. He's with
– but Vince left a while ago.
Yeah, but Pot Roast was kind of the
– New Vince.
The new Vince for a while because they were the same girthy approach to football.
Mm-hmm.
I liked Pot Roast, though. I want Pot Roast back.
I thought he would have made it. I like his he would opine a lot and say things that sometimes made you scratch your head. But he was not politically correct, so I respected that. Okay, but yeah, we don't have him. But yes, football season will start for the New England Patriots Sunday night against Arizona. We will see. I have my – you can't see, but I got my Patriots garb again on. So now the catcalls and jeers can occur as I'm walking around the grocery store on –
We don't really perceive them so much as a threat anymore, so it's not quite as annoying for you to wear that.
We shall see. We shall see.
We shall see. Shall we not? So this is the Retirement IRA Show, not the NFL Recap Show. 970-353-1310. Did you find something for us to speak about for the next 12 minutes?
Let me see. No, this is the one thanking us for the answer last week.
What about that Social Security? We talked about earnings test a little bit here, the earnings test as it
applies
to spouses.
Oh, that's right. Why don't we talk about the one that Justin was working on in the office?
Mm-hmm. Want to set the stage?
Yes. So what we were working on is there was a couple. They probably have shorter than average life expectancies. The wife was 66 and not working. And did not have significant, if any, Social Security on her own earnings. The husband is 62 and still working. And they were asking Justin, and Justin in turn asked me, and I in turn asked you, because you didn't answer the phone when Justin called you. He thought because these people had much reduced life expectancies, getting Social Security out sooner rather than later would be beneficial. But the wife, who was at her full retirement age of 66, did not have earnings. So she needed to file a spousal. But the spouse was still working. So he thought, why don't we have the husband file anyways? The earnings test would eliminate most of his earnings. And why is this important? Well, in order for the spouse to collect, the husband has to have filed. So if he was to file at 62 and keep working, eventually they would recalculate his benefit as if he didn't retire at 62, but he'd have to wait to 66. And his thought was then the spouse could begin collecting Social Security.
So the older wife, who had reached her full retirement age, could at least collect a spousal benefit while waiting.
Right. And they did, because of their reduced life expectancy, they wanted to claim Social Security sooner rather than later. But the husband wanted to keep working. They needed it. And unfortunately, that's not going to work.
No. And I'll answer this fairly quickly because we do have some callers.
Well, why don't we take the real caller? And if we don't get to this, we'll
answer it next time.
Next time.
That sounds like a great idea. So we're going to go to Georgette in Greeley. Good morning, Georgette. Thanks for calling. What can we do for you today?
Hi. I just wanted to encourage you guys to keep doing a live show just every once in a while, maybe once a month or every other month. Mm-hmm. I do listen. I'm really nervous to even call and say this, but it is kind of fun.
So, well, thank you.
We like doing it when people call. That's what makes it interesting because you never know what kind of question you're going to get, what direction it's going to lead us. So we actually find it fun. During the summer, though, we were running into
nobody
the case
calling
of showing up here at crack of dawn on Saturday morning, and we got to talk to each other.
Right. So. No, I know. And that was fine, and I could listen to you guys, you know, while I went out and did my errands too.
But. Well, Georgette, I'd love to be able to put you in the pie drawing, but I need you to ask something, anything.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. I thought you said I could call about anything and get in the pie drawing.
Anything retirement related. Something you're curious about.
I'll tell you what. I was married for over a decade. I've been divorced for over a decade, and I have some para. Is there any kind of offset? I was told, someone just recently mentioned to me, and I haven't looked into it yet, that when you're married for over a certain length of time, you might be eligible for some of your spouse's.
You are eligible for what's called a divorced spouse benefit while your ex is still alive, and something called a divorce survivor benefit if they were to pass away, because you were married for more than 10 years. So that's one issue. You absolutely do qualify for that. Where the para comes in is that is going to subject – that will affect those Social Security benefits to the GPO, government pension offset. And that states that any benefit you receive as a spousal or survivor claim will be reduced $2 for every $3 that you are earning from PARA once you retire. Now, it's only once you collect. So a lot of people will collect their spousal or survivor benefit for a while before they turn on the PARA, and they can collect it in full up until the point where they turn on the PARA. So
okay.
Keep that in mind. That is something that's very common and would be a reason why you might want to start those as soon as possible, which normally if your ex is still alive would be your age 62, as long as they're at least 62, whether they've claimed or not, you'll be able to claim that ex, that divorced spousal benefit, and collect it unreduced, at least unreduced for GPO, until you turn on PARA, which, you know, who knows when that might be.
Right. Okay. Thanks so much.
It's possible. Sure. Thanks. That's a great off-the-top-of-your-head question. Thanks, Georgette.
Thanks.
I've got you entered in the pie drawing.
I have been listening to you. I have been listening to you guys. So
great.
Thanks.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And then, actually, we have time to squeeze in another one. We've got a whole nother call here. We're going to go to Janice in Greeley. Good morning, Janice. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
Great. Thanks for calling. What can we do for you today?
Well, first of all, I wanted to thank you and Jim for helping me so much, and I never did get in contact with you. But you were trying to help me to start getting early retirement. I finally did. I wanted to let you know that this isn't so much a question, but just to let you know that in case anybody else is out there listening, I kept trying. I applied March 30th, 2016, for my early retirement. I could not seem to. I was backlogged. I think it was that April 29th thing is what I thought.
Mm-hmm.
And I was not receiving anything and not. And every time my cousin would go on his computer, they would just say, your case has not been determined or whatever that is. Finally, I went down there to the Greeley Social Security office. Wasn't in there very long. And the minute I explained to them what happened, they came back. And they said where I had worked when they closed the building down after 11 years, they said that my 2014 income tax was not reported to Social Security from the IRS.
Mm-hmm.
And turns out my executive director found out that nobody that had worked there, none of their returns had, you know,
mm-hmm.
been given. And that was what the holdup was. And after filing March 30th, I finally just got my lump sum for those 4 months. And my first monthly payment just last August of 24th and August of 25th.
Mm-hmm.
And so does that, I mean, how does the IRS, I guess it's the IRS, I don't know.
Yeah, sometimes there's a little glitch there, and that is one reason why we encourage people to check their earnings record regularly online at the Social Security website to make sure that your earnings are being posted. And this is particularly the case when you've worked somewhere where they've closed down. Because I can't tell you how many times I've heard stories from people where in that final year, not so much if it's a really big company because they have more of a formal human resources.
Yeah, this is a smaller company.
A smaller company where maybe one of the owners was doing the bookkeeping, and just the overwhelming nature of closing the business, and the stuff doesn't get filed properly, and that can never show, it maybe never shows up on your earnings record. That can be fixed even if you have to supply some of your own records.
I had to take my own W-2 form.
Yeah.
Well, actually, we didn't close until August of 2015. 2013 was turned in,
mm-hmm.
2015, but for some reason, 2014 was overlooked.
Wow, yeah. It's bizarre, but it does absolutely happen. So I'm really glad to hear that you finally got it, and you pointed out something important, which is when these types of delays happen, they backdate your benefit to when you went in and applied, and they mm-hmm. kind of get you caught up. They pay you a lump sum for those months, and then your monthly benefits start to show up then, whatever Wednesday of the month, your birthday.
Yeah, it took a little longer because then they upped it an extra $13 because what they were going to give me when they realized those hadn't been turned in at all.
Good.
And also that new, real quick, I know that new once-in-a-lifetime thing because this is my first year. Would that mm-hmm. apply to me?
Yes, actually, if you're claiming your own benefit and you're under your full retirement age, yes, they will prorate for you your earnings throughout the year or at least the earnings test, is prorated on a monthly basis instead of being looked at as a lump annual amount. So if you earned a lot before you did early retirement in March, that won't apply to that that earnings test. Only the monthly prorated amount, which is about $1,300 a month. So if you're not making hardly anything or nothing since March 30th, you won't be subject to the earnings test this year.
Okay. So I can find all that information out at
helpwithmysocialsecurity.com, and that'll be the blog post that pops up. It's a little bizarre rule, so I tried to write it fairly clearly, but it is a little bizarre as far
and that's
as the
a
rule
recent
goes.
One though.
The recent post.
Yeah,
it's on there right now on the homepage.
You'll see
there.
It. It's one of the top recent one or two. Mm-hmm. You'll see it. It's one that we blogged on
just
very
recently.
It just
came
recently.
Up Wednesday, so a couple days ago.
Okay, so helpwithmysocialsecurity.com because I know you're short of time. Right. And, well, I appreciate it. And Jim and Chris, you have been such a big help to me over these past few months. I keep calling in and then I get really overwhelmed and but boy, you have been a big help to me, and I just want to say thank you, and I hope you continue to be on the radio because you guys are good.
Great. Well, thanks a lot, Janice. You go out and have a great Saturday.
Okay, you too. Okay. Thank you so much, guys.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, so we are towards the end of the show here. We are down to about a minute and a half. So
plenty of time. We're going to have to get your names all.
I'm going to randomly assign numbers to these folks.
I have to pick a number between 1 and 6?
1 and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Oh, yes, I almost missed one. Yes, we have 6 callers. So Jim's going to randomly choose a number from 1 to 6 after I've randomly assigned everyone a number. What is your number?
8.
Come on.
Divided by 3.
No, still not
going to
work.
It's not going to work. I will choose, let me see. I'm 53.
Mm-hmm.
So 5 and 3 is 8. It's 2016. I'll go with 4.
Divided by 8. Okay. 4 is Georgette, which of course isn't her real name, but she didn't want to share her name
her
on
real
the radio.
Name?
Hopefully, yes, we do have her real name. So Georgette, or whoever you really are, we will contact you and get you that coupon for the free pie at Fat Albert's. We're at the end of another glorious...
And I want to say thank you to all our listeners. We had a lot of callers today.
We did.
And requests to continue to do live shows.
Yeah.
So I think people ruined our Saturdays for us.
Well, just once a month, maybe. We can do that. So
okay.
It'll be winter. We won't be doing so much. So this is the Retirement and IRA Show. Thanks for another
We won't
great
be
week.
Live for the next few weeks. We all have plans. But nope. In a couple more weeks, we'll come live again.
But contact us at jimhelps.com if you have any further questions. Have a great Saturday.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.